listening to County Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the New York State Association of Counties. This episode features a conversation on school transportation services. NYSEC's Executive Director, Stephen Aquario, is joined by David Christopher, Executive Director of the New York Association for Pupil Transportation, and Bill Harvey, Director of Transportation and Safety for Honeoy Falls Lima Central School District, which encompasses Monroe, Ontario, and Livingston counties. They will discuss the challenges of school transportation, especially including COVID-19 social distancing and a shortage of school bus drivers.
Hi, thank you for joining us. I'm Stephen Aquario, the Executive Director of the New York Association of Counties. I'm joined today by David Christopher from the New York Association for Pupil Transportation, and I'm also joined by Bill Harvey, the Director of Transportation and Safety for Honeoy Falls Lima Central School District. I certainly appreciate you joining us today here, and thank you for all you do to help the safety and health of the children of your school district in Western New York. We're doing this podcast today. We're talking about school transportation, and in particular, school bus driver shortages. This is not a new issue facing the state of New York. This has been a problem for school districts across the state. I had started talking with David Christopher about how municipal employees can help with who currently have commercial driver's licenses to try to help with this shortage. But let's start with David. Let's talk about school bus driver or school bus driver shortages. Most school districts have a shortage of these drivers. Can you tell us from a statewide perspective why? Why do we have such a shortage? It seems like a good job, a rewarding job, and it seems like a job that folks could get into their schedule, meaning, you know, you got to be up early and drive them between 6 and 8, and then you pick them up between 2:30 and 4:30. It would seem to be a good position to have. Why do we have such a shortage?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons, Steve. Let me just preface that this discussion on the scope of the business of school transportation. We transport 2.3 million students every day to and from school in the state of New York alone, with over 50,000 school buses and over 60,000 school bus drivers. So, the issue here is that, you know, it's a more difficult job to qualify for now than it has been in the past because of the new federal CDL requirements that came into play a few years ago, and also tightening up of physical regulations and training regulations. All good things, all things that have been done to enhance safety for kids. But as a result of that, because requirements are very high, and quite honestly, it's not a job that you can typically live on in terms of the pay, because it's not a full-time 2,080-hour-a-year job for the most part. For the most part in our state, it's a part-time job where, you know, you might work 20, 25, 30 hours a week, split shift a couple hours in the morning and a couple 3 hours in the afternoon, and maybe a few extra field trips or extracurricular trips here and there. So you have to almost be a retired person or a second income person, maybe you've got a business that you're supplementing in order to do this to survive, because it just, you know, at the end of the day, you know, annually you're not making enough money to survive, even though the hourly rates are typically pretty high. People look at the hourly rates and say, well, that's a lot of money, 20, 25 bucks an hour. But the reality is, you know, the hours aren't there. So, you know, it's increased regulation, increased oversight, and, you know, the fact that you can't live on this job.
Bill, yeah, Harvey, the Honeoy Lima, let's talk about your district and the potential shortages that you see, not just in your district, but in your region of the state in Western New York. Who are the drivers right now? And do you think that we should provide an incentive, perhaps, like we do for volunteer firefighters, to try to get folks out there to actually do this job and actually help incentivize them? We give them some property tax credit. We give them some community college credit and access to community colleges. It's the right thing to do for the volunteer fire. Have we reached that point with school district bus drivers? Should we try to incentivize them a little bit?
Yeah, I think we should, Steve. And to kind of back up one step further and talk, you know, just to add on to David's answer, all of the things David described are further complicated by the fact that it's the bus driving is just typically not thought of as something that people would want to do or would enjoy doing. You know, most people that I've hired that'll tell me that when I told my family I was going to be a bus driver, they said, "Have you lost your mind?" Right? Because people just can't imagine driving the bus and dealing with the kids and how horrible it must be. And it's really the image that the job has. And I always tell people, I produced a recruitment video about a year and a half ago, and the theme was, what about the kids? And it was because I firmly believe, because I've witnessed it, that most people never drive a school bus because of the kids. They say, "I could never handle the kids. I couldn't do it." And then on the flip side, once those that do start driving the bus, the reason they keep driving it is because of the kids, because they fall in love with the kids. They love the contact, the interaction, and it's just a really satisfying job. So, you know, then to fast forward to your question, who are our drivers today? As Dave said, this is not a job where you can really secure a living wage. So we have a lot of folks that do this. If they're younger folks, they typically have another business. I have landscapers. I have DJs. I have people that do residential home cleaning. I have people with other jobs, their own businesses, and then they augment that with bus driving, and that allows them to be earning a pension and to secure health care benefits and some sick leave and paid holidays, some of those benefits that come along with the job. And then the other group that typically comes in as a bus driver is people that I call it like a bridge job. It takes you from your retirement to your actual retirement, right? So it's, you know, you retire from a job, but you're not quite ready to stay home every day and not do anything or not have any job activities. So they pick up this, they get the summers up, get things done in between runs. So I have people that are, and probably the majority, probably 70% of my staff are kind of the retirees, bridge people, they're bridge jobs. Now, they're great people. The downside of that is you're only going to have them 4, 5 to 7 years. So they come in. It takes you 2 or 3 years to really develop your style and cement your skills. And then they work a couple more years, and we lose them. And it's so that is a challenge in and of itself. The hard part is replacing. And I think this past year prior to COVID, it was complicated by the fact that the unemployment rate was so low. So I'm thinking that there's a potential to pick up some bus drivers and fill some of those gaps as we come out of the COVID crisis. And I agree with you. I think it would be a phenomenal idea, and we even talked about it at the state level with NIAP about incentivizing people some way, as we do with the volunteer firefighter tax benefit.
If I could just jump on something Bill has said, and I think he hit a good point there in terms of the image of the job. As an industry, we probably don't do a good enough job promoting the job. I can tell you through my experience, I was a transportation director in a large school district in the Capital Region for many years, and we hired a significant amount of retirees and people who, you know, were in between jobs, et cetera. And almost without exception, when they left the employ of my school district and finally retired, they would tell me that it was the best job they ever had, with the most satisfaction they ever had. They love the kids, and they just love the job. And they're sorry they had to retire, but, you know, it was time. So we probably need to do a better job talking about the value of the school bus driving position in our state and nationally as well, because this is a national problem. I think that was a great point you made, Bill.
Let's talk about the one of the purposes of this call was to try to draw some attention to the qualifications of the school bus driver, and that was a great discussion we had here about the rewards and the perils of being a school bus driver, dealing with that in a rush public, right, and trying to keep a safe roadway and stop folks from passing that stop school bus. And I think that red light camera program that they got is going to help bring attention to school bus safety. But what about these municipal employees who work in a highway department that might be able to schedule fix their own municipal schedule such that they could be a driver? They have a CDL. They could get trained. You've got State Department of Transportation employees who have the CDL. You've got a lot of mechanics in these public works departments at the town, city, village, county level, the State Department of Transportation as well. I'd rather keep the mechanics in the shop and the garage at the school district transportation department so that they can fix the buses and we're not pulling them from the mechanic role at the school district, and that they can help keep repairing and maintaining the buses, but rather try to pull from the municipal side. Is that something that makes sense? Have we tried that before? Should we be looking to that group of people to try to help?
Well, I'll start off with that one if I could, Dave.
Yep, that's fine. Yep.
You know, we've thought of that, Steve, and have approached. We've gone to our local volunteer fire department because some of those guys in their regular they have a CDL license that perhaps they've secured for their regular employment. We've gone to our local village DPW and the town and talked to some of those folks about opportunities we have. Maybe they finish their day at 3 o'clock and they could come over and cover some sports runs or some take home routes for us, and we really have not been able to spark any interest on the part of the employees, probably for all the reasons that, like David said, and you know, just the image of the job. The other problem we got into, we're getting now at our district where our hourly rates are, they're not the highest, they're not as high as a couple Dave stated, but they're very competitive and they're very reasonable. For a long time, a lot of districts were paying at a lower rate of, you know, $13.50, $14, and there still are some that are paying that, and a lot of these municipal workers are just not willing to take on that extra job for less money than what they make at their regular job. So, and I will also add to that that we've had a history of getting some firefighters, paid firefighters, from the city around here. It would be the city of Rochester or Henrietta. Some of the suburbs have paid firefighters, and a lot of times they're on a rotating wheel that allows them to be off for 2 or 3 days. And a lot of the Monroe County districts are benefiting from firefighters that jump on board and help out. So I have a couple of those myself.
Yeah, I think it's just a continual process of looking at different options out there. I think if you look at the driver force in a typical school district, it's from all they're from all over the place in terms of different past histories and different jobs, and it's a job that you know, people, it's a kind of a niche job that you can work around other kinds of jobs, or you know, again, a second income earner or something. So I think it's a continual process of just beating the bushes to find people who, you know, might fit into that particular job of a school bus driver.
So I have right now we're in a COVID time here where most folks are home. Some folks are back at work. The school districts themselves had to submit plans to the state education department, be in compliance with the governor's guidance, the governor likely to put out some school district guidance reopening plans next week. Let's talk a little bit about COVID and school district transportation. What's happening now? What do we expect? What are your thoughts on how are we going to get the children to school if and when we're able to safely reopen school districts? We know that school fall sports are likely to be canceled, the vast majority of them. So that will help a little bit on moving the school kids around. Softball remains an open question. Maybe some other sports might be allowed, but the vast majority of it closed. What are we hearing about how to safely move school children around when we're able to?
So let me tell you, let me start by just telling you a little bit about from the state level. The State Ed Department and the Department of Health just recently issued guidelines on school reopening, and there's some specific things in those guidelines that apply directly to school transportation services, and I'm going to let Bill explain those because he's deeply involved in that and he knows the nuts and bolts. But NIAP has worked consistently and over the past several weeks developing putting forth ideas on how to comply with potential guidelines. And now that the guidelines are actually out, there's a lot of discussions going on in terms of best practices and things that need to be done to transport school kids safely. So Bill actually is chairing that committee for school reopening. He's also a legislative chair, and he's also deep in his school district in terms of creating the plan. So that's kind of like the high-level state issue that's going on, but I want, Bill, if you could just explain what you're doing in your particular district to the extent that you can.
Yeah, and I'll be glad to do that. So this presents a unique challenge, probably like none other I've seen in my 36 years in the business. But, you know, it's pretty clear with our state guidelines that our objectives are to reduce capacity to the best of our ability on the buses. And we've done that. We added a couple routes, knowing that, as you said, Steve, the fall sports will be suspended. Right now they're suspended through September 21st. So we have but we've put a little bit more resource towards the bus routes. We've got our buses loaded to a factor not to exceed two-thirds capacity. We have to have social distancing whenever practicable and feasible on the bus. So we will be making every effort through strategic seat assignments. All students this year will be assigned a seat on the bus prior to the school year. Normally the driver would assign seats after they get to know the kids a little bit, but we're going to assign seats based on sequential order that we pick kids up, spacing them out so that rather than having students sitting side by side or within 6 feet of each other for the whole route, that if that has to happen, it might only be for 10 minutes at the end. So social distancing, all the students are required by SED regulation to wear a face mask at all times during the transport process. They're also required to social distance as they wait for the bus, get on the bus, and exit the bus. So we will have markers on the bus to delineate 6 feet. The transportation folks, the drivers and the transportation trainers, are charged with training all the students in social distancing, and as we would with, you know, safely crossing the road. We're going to incorporate that into our bus safety drills. And at the end of the day, you know, we got to have our buses cleaned, deep cleaned, if you will, so cleaned and sanitized and ready to go for the next day. Now, the state requirements require that be done at least daily. At our district, we're going to do that after each shift. So, you know, we'll be cleaning and sanitizing the buses after each tour of duty, if you will. And that's a good thing. Like Governor Cuomo said back early on in this thing, that the subway cars and the trains have never been cleaner, right? They've never been cleaner. So, you know, we'll be doing cleaning, and of course that requires us training our staff on how to properly clean and how to safely use the products. Also requires us maybe expanding the work hours a little bit to allow our staff time to do those duties, right? So where they might have been working 5 or 5 1/4 hours a day last year. This year they might be working, you know, 6 hours a day or 6 1/2 hours a day to incorporate all the extra duties. So there's a lot of changes operationally within our department, and some of those changes are geared at, they're all geared at safety, but they're also geared at accommodating the needs of our school to get these kids back in the building and back to learning. So every single district is coming up with a variety of different scenarios, you know, and we've heard it, seen it on the news where we're distance learning, hybrid, or all back in session. So, you know, and it varies, and we're still in the process here at Huntington Falls of nailing down which plan exactly we'll reopen with, and then we will wait for the governor to make a final decision. He promises to do that the week of August 1st through 7th. So, David, is there anything I've left out? There's lots to cover. I could fill the whole hour just on that topic, but...
No, I think you've covered a lot of it, and I think, you know, the important point in terms of this conversation is the effect on the driver force. We have concerns about how this will impact the drivers who may feel uncomfortable coming back to work, and will that create an even greater school bus driver shortage in our industry? Now, I've talked to several districts across the state, and I've heard stories where school districts are losing drivers every day because they choose not to be exposed to the potential of a COVID virus on a school bus, to other operations that say their drivers are totally on board and they plan on coming back and doing everything they need to do to be safe and have, make the kids safe. So we don't know yet in terms of what the final outcome will be in terms of its impact on the driver force, but we have to be prepared either way.
Yeah, and I, Dave, to build on that, I would add that, you know, I had mentioned that probably 70% of our drivers are in that bridge time between retirement and actual full retirement, which puts them in that age group that's high risk, right? And either they themselves, not just by age, but some of them have health risks themselves or within their household with their spouse or families, parents, grandkids, whatever the case may be. So yeah. So that's the other factor. We have several drivers that I think are taking a wait-and-see approach, and then they will determine whether or not they feel it's safe enough to return to the job. So I think that I've lost one so far. I have a couple that are sitting on the fence and a couple other that I know are going to wait and see. So I'm sure this will create a bit of a hardship for us with respect to staffing.
We'll be right back to discuss more challenges in school transportation after this brief message. NYSEC provides training and education to county leaders on issues vital to public policy and county services. Over the past few months, NYSEC has hosted webinars that address the challenges being faced at the county level amid the COVID-19 pandemic. All upcoming and previous webinars in this series can be found at nysec.org/webinars.
So, are we bracing for another shortage in 2020 for school bus drivers?
Well, my judgment would be yes, we are. And I've, you know, counseled everyone that I've spoken to be recruiting and do the kinds of things you need to do to make sure that the seats are filled. Some folks in the industry are saying, you know, with the unemployment being as high as it is, that may be to our advantage, because historically, when unemployment has been very high, we've been able to recruit drivers for the driving jobs. So we're hopeful that might be part of it, but it's unknown, because, you know, the reality is I just recently read an article that school bus driving is in the top 10 for most dangerous jobs in terms of possibly being exposed to the virus, because there's really no way for a school bus driver to, short of a mask and, you know, face shield perhaps, to really distance themselves from, you know, potential carriers. So it's something I think we need to be cognizant of and watch out for and prepare for.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing about the staffing, I would, to answer your question, Steve, I would say, yes, I anticipate further driver shortage through 2020 and into 2021. I think there's going to be a ripple effect here where we'll see some people deciding to step out maybe earlier than they would have, and maybe step out, you know, because of the hazards, or because I know some of the drivers are not pleased with the thought of having to do the extra cleaning time. They'll, you know, some of them may feel that I didn't sign up to be a custodian, I signed up to be a driver. So that'll be an issue. And the other thing that's hard for us in staffing, I want to make sure and bring the point to the turnaround time on a new staff member. Typically, if you were to walk in, Steve, to your local school district and want to be a bus driver, from the time you get your permit till the time you're actually fully employed and out driving the bus, it can easily be 8 to 10 weeks. 8 weeks is not unusual between the training and then getting a road test scheduled and then getting approved by the board and having all the necessary prerequisites met and being properly licensed where you can go out and do the job. Not at all uncommon or unreasonable to say that's a two-month window. So people that really need a job, they need to start working like next week, not a month and a half from now. So that's a unique challenge that we have, and many of the school districts have started hiring those people on as bus monitors in the interim so we can get them to work, make them a part of our team, begin to teach them the ropes a little bit while we're training them to be a CDL driver. And then they've already been board approved, and when they get their license, we can kind of expedite that process. So school districts and contractors have been getting very creative with ways to try and shorten that window.
What's the current process for recruitment of school bus drivers?
Well, you want to take that, Dave?
Yeah, go ahead and take that.
Advertising? Are you trying to? I mean,
so I think.
Hold on a minute, Bill. It seems to me if I've got a CDL, I've got some decisions to make in my life. That CDL is a pretty valuable license. I could use it to, you know, to drive commercial trucks for a living and make a wage that way. I could use it to drive a fire truck. I could use it to drive a sanitation truck. I could use it to drive you know, commercial bus or mass transit vehicle. It seems to me that license is a valuable commodity. How does that factor into this discussion?
Well, I think in our current situation, the way it factors in is that there's a ever-increasing need. The truck driving, the CDL drivers, that industry, everything you just mentioned, Steve, they're as short on drivers as we are. And, you know, so we have some drivers. I know I have like 3 or 4 drivers that I was not able to offer summer employment. Now, it's a 10-month job to drive school bus, but we always run about 30 or 40% of our fleet throughout the summer, and I'm able to provide work through the summer months to those people that need it. I could not do that this year. And so the folks that, as you said, that's a very valuable commodity to hold that CDL license, and they've gone out and gotten jobs working for other companies, businesses, construction outfits, driving over the summer. And my hope is that they will truly return. But, you know, we may lose some drivers because of that, especially if we don't return to in-school instruction, where my drivers are going to be out of work again in September.
Yeah, that's a good point. We didn't talk about that. We may have a modified school year, which is going to affect drivers themselves. It seems to me that we need to provide some backstop here, some incentive, some minimum guarantee for bus drivers so that they could plan with some degree of predictability, that they would get a certain salary or a certain amount of income and be on call and prepared, you know, to what may come ahead of us. And I'm going to help you. I'm going to work with the governor and the state legislature and try to address this issue, which seems to me to be not a crisis, but a looming and continuing problem.
That's a good point, Steve. And when schools closed in-person instruction, many schools paid their school bus drivers throughout the rest of the year, and that's a great thing because they can't be replaced overnight, as we've shared with you. And of course, if schools do not open in September, we're certainly hoping that trend will continue. I can tell you that on the private side, many school districts did not pay their private contractors. And as a result of that, that created some chaos with the private sector side of the business because they had to lay off drivers. And in fact, some of the private companies went out of business and won't be coming back in September. So I think it's real important that school districts recognize the importance of the school bus driver and make plans to keep them compensated, to keep them in the industry. You know, we called it continuity of services through this crisis, and certainly we hope that that's going to be the case in September when schools resume or not, because that's very, very critical to keep the driver force in place.
Well, if you think about child care, a very important aspect of a parent transporting that child to school, that's a big deal, having the ability to have the district pick up that child, whether that Mary is going to go to a private school or Mary's going to go to a public school. They're both typically involved with the same district transportation schedule. If parents have to drive their children to school, that could further disrupt what is already a very disruptive time in our economy and in our life, affecting people far and beyond. This is an important issue, and I'm glad that we're having this discussion. Let's go back to the municipal aspect of this. What can the county clerks do who operate departments of motor vehicles? Is there things that they could do, perhaps to assist, to make sure that the number of testing sites meets the needs of the district's training and preparing examiners, or identifying any other inconsistency or confusion, or adjusting the availability of testing times to help in this regard? What's the message we can give to our county clerks?
Yeah, the issue there, Steve, is as the school districts recruit drivers, candidates, they need to send them to the local DMV offices that are overseen and run by the county clerk's offices to get their CDL permit test. And as a result of the DMVs, the local DMVs being closed down, they're certainly getting up and running, and, you know, they've got backlog, I'm sure, that they're having to deal with. In some cases, those testing opportunities have been pushed out, scheduled out a month or 6 weeks. And that's really way too late for a school transportation operation to get somebody trained up and qualified in place for September. So what we would ask is that if the county clerks could work with the school districts to schedule prompt CDL permit tests, that would be helpful, because once they get that permit in their hands, the candidates can get out and train. And in fact, I will tell you, Monroe County worked with us and did a great job opening up additional opportunities for the school districts to come in and test their CDL candidates. So we're just asking for that same opportunity wherever it's needed across our state, knowing full well that the county clerks are, you know, getting up and running as a result of their shutdown as well. But we can't train someone, as Bill said. We can't train somebody and get them ready to go in a couple of weeks. It's an 8 to 10 week deal, and it's a significant amount of time and effort to get somebody totally qualified to go out and transport school children. So anything they can do to accommodate that CDL permit test would be helpful.
Right. Terrific. Well, I certainly learned a lot more about this occupation. I've gained a newfound respect for that position of a school bus driver and the importance of that position, carrying the safety of 20, 30, 40 children on a vehicle is a very responsible and a very important position. And I'm grateful for all the work that you two gentlemen do to maintain the safety of our children and making sure that they get to school safely. I appreciate the time we spent here today, and I expect we'll be working together over these next couple of weeks through the rest of the year and trying to see if we can't get some additional state legislative activity to help incentivize this industry. I am going to have up next Robert Schneider will join us, the executive director of the New York School Boards Association, to talk about school district plans and what's at stake with those plans as we enter the 2020 school year. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate the opportunity and the support.
Thanks for listening to this NYSAC podcast. Keep tuning in to hear more insightful conversations on county government throughout New York State. And feel free to reach out to our staff if there is a topic you would like to hear us discuss on the podcast.